God, can we hold on a second? I apologize. Printing stuff, and I'm in the office, and she did it remotely.
That's, I think we should include that.
No.
Episode 106 of There Is No Offseason, a baseball prospectus daily podcast focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley of the BP Fantasy Team, and I am joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and BP's minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. Brett and Craig, I would ask you how you are doing, but nothing really matters.
I'm very saddened by this nihilist Ben intro.
I was a very happy boy at this time last week, and I am now a very sad boy and shall remain so for the next 8 to 12 days until my Xander is healed.
I'm bummed about the Xander thing, but Ben being sad really just brings a sort of joy to me. I can't be held down.
You're really torn, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, I am sad about Xander, but injuries happen. Ben being this sad is far more rare.
I'm thinking back on all the things I've done to you over the years, and frankly, that's fair. I can't even really be that upset.
I can only imagine what's coming in a couple weeks.
So. Yeah, I will have my vengeance in this life or the next. So welcome to episode 106. We're going to try to do what we did last week, which is get in and out of here in about 45 minutes. And this is 5 or 6 weeks in a row for us. That might be a Tino record, or at least for the past several years. So as you could probably tell from the sour note that intro began on, we are going to hit on some of the more prominent injuries that have swept across the league to this point. Talk a little bit about some good and bad assignments for top Dynasty League prospects, basically guys who have aggressive assignments who we're excited about, and some names that we were a little bummed to see, you know, not get bumped up a level or see held back. And then we will do another version of Madden or Mad Online before we head out on this fine evening. So I'll start with Xander because we referenced him. Bad news is he was the hottest hitter on the planet, so a particularly bad time to lose him to injury. Good news is he was the hottest hitter on the planet, and it looks like that breakout we've been telling you about for 4 years is real. And he should only be out for, you know, another week or two. So never good, but I think as close to the best case scenario as we can get. Craig, the same cannot be said about Eugenio Suarez.
Yeah, he got hit in the hand or thumb. I'm sorry, hand or thumb. Well, a thumb is on a hand. So that,
it is on the hand. It is definitely a part of the hand.
Yeah, some part of a hand that may or may not include a thumb. It's to be determined. But whatever it is broken now, which is a real bummer. I think he's a pretty underrated player, especially in fantasy. Obviously not the case in OBP leagues. But if you're in a standard 5x5, he's a really useful guy, especially at a corner infield position or something like that. Was hitting decently. And I mean, it's a disappointing thing. And he's going to be out probably at least 4 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks, I think. Right.
I think 6. I think 6 was the estimate.
So, maybe 8. Yeah. So if you want to look on the bright side of all of this, it's that we're recording this on April 11th, Nick Senzel is able to be called up and have the Reds retain an extra year of service of his services on April 13th. So on Friday the 13th, such as it was. So that is the that's kind of the silver lining in dynasty leagues, is that we might get to get a taste of Nick Senzel maybe earlier than we would have thought if Suarez was healthy. I know they were playing Senzel at second base, at shortstop. They did move him back to third after the Suarez injury. So I guess that's a bit of a bright spot.
So you are not here for the Alex Blandino era?
Yeah, no, I'm not super into it. And I don't know, it was fun watching people on Twitter like harass C. Trent Rosecrans, being like, they're not giving Blandino shouldn't come up just to sit. He's like one of the young guys. And it's like, that's not the guy you make the case for in that situation. Like, if they called up Senzel and didn't play him, I'm all for it. But also, he's like, Blandino's 25. This is not a and has one game in the majors, and it's this year. So like, this is not the guy to go to bat for in that situation.
No, Craig, what do you think the percentage is that Senzel is in the majors on April 15th?
I'm at like 90%+. I think there's a really good chance they call. I mean, I think there was a good chance they called him up early as it was. Like, again, they were playing him at second base, and that can be seen as a reflection on Jose Peraza's season. I'm sorry, Ben. But I think, you know, as we've talked about, your observation that playing these guys in different positions precedes a call up or a shift up the organizational ladder is a valid one in this case. And he's good enough to do it, right? He's ready to be in the majors or to be challenged with being in the majors. It doesn't mean he's going to dominate right away, but that it's good developmentally for him. And I think, given that, and plus the injury and plus the year of control, that there's really a good chance that they give him time because he's the best option.
Yeah. Two things to add to that. One, I totally agree with you about the position thing. I think it's hilarious that we're there with Senzel at third base.
Yeah, it's weird. Right.
It's so weird because I keep reading it and I'm like, yeah, I get it. But it's just, it's very jarring to read because he only played third base heading into this year. But the other thing is that, you know, I think the Reds have a little bit of an advantage here in that, given that the Suarez injury is a very particular thing, they can call up Senzel, whether they do it Saturday, whether they do it next week, whenever. I think we all assume it's going to happen before Suarez gets back. You know, they have an out if Senzel is not performing at the major league level that they wouldn't have if they just called him up without the injury. Now they might choose to, if he struggles and they call him up and Suarez comes back and they want to try to, you know, they want to try to squeeze him into Super 2 status, they certainly could try to do that. But it's something that they might try to use to their advantage. So while we're all excited about Senzel coming up, and I do think that when he comes up, he is going to stick. You know, I think there's a decent chance that he goes back to the minors at some point this year.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And it's I agree with you. I like the idea that it gives them the option. Developmentally, I think it's a good idea for him to get a taste of it. And if it doesn't go exceedingly well, then they have no problem shifting him back down and saying, you know, work your ass off and you'll be up here, you know, in September or something like that. And it kind of works out for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I should clarify, it is a broken thumb and there's currently no timetable, as far as I know, on his return, as far as his return.
Okay, so we'll stay with one more injured infielder. Brett, if you had missed the birth of either of your children and then tore your hamstring 3 days later, how hard would Carolyn have laughed at you?
Extraordinarily hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And it would be well-deserved.
Yeah. Yep. So noted tough guy TM Rugi Odor is going to be out for a while with a hamstring injury. Obviously, the injury in itself isn't too worrisome, and maybe his troubles last year in and of themselves aren't too worrisome. But at what point do you start to get a little bit skeptical with Odor, Brett? Because it has not been a very good 14 months now.
I'm I'm ready to give him a solid, you know, 250 to 300 plate appearances this year. I think there's too much talent to give up on him. I mean, obviously this gets in the way of him getting the playing time to, you know, to prove that he can do better than last year. But I, you know, I'm not super out on him like a lot of people seem to be. I think he makes for a really interesting target in dynasty leagues now, just because I think there's the perception that something has changed this year with Odor, that he's, you know, kind of cemented himself as just a real shit sandwich of a fantasy player. And I don't think that's true. I don't think he's done that at all. It was, what, six games before he got hurt. I think we all owe him a little bit more of a leash than that.
So from one torn hamstring to another, Corey Knebel, right? Knebel?
Knebel.
It is Knebel. God damn it. Well, it's better than Knebel. We're getting closer. Maybe the next time we talk about Corey Knebel, I'll nail it on the first try. Craig, pick your poison. Jacob Barnes, Matt Albers, Jeremy Jeffries, Josh Hader.
I love that you can't even... You mispronounced Jeffress. It's fantastic.
It should be Jeffries, so I don't consider that an error. That's frankly on him.
I think Jacob Barnes is the early answer. I know he's blown at least one save, right, Brett? Brett has at least four shares of him, so I know he's keeping track of it. He's blown one or more than one.
Two. Okay. That's last time out, he didn't actually allow an earned run, but I believe it still counted as a blown save.
Yeah. Okay. So but I still think he's the guy. He was really good last year. He's got the stuff to do it. I think the biggest challenger just on pure talent is Josh Hader, who is really good. He got touched up a little bit today, like the day that we're recording. So I do think that they'll give people chances. I don't think Matt Albers is there or deserves to be there. Jeffress has the experience, but he just doesn't miss enough bats for me to be in the closing role. So I think it kind of defaults to a Barnes or Hader issue. And given that Hader's a lefty and can be a little bit more valuable deployed situationally, I'd lean Barnes.
So I think because Barnes is probably the most logical choice and Hader has the most talent and Jeffries, not changing it, has the pedigree, it's going to be Albers. It's definitely going to be Albers. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Barnes is the best pitcher. Before the last appearance, I really thought Barnes was going to be the guy who had the most saves while he was out. And now I'm about 55% Barnes, 45% Albers. I think it's definitely one of the two.
So Albers got the save today, right?
That is an easy thing that I can check with the internet.
I believe Albers did get a save today, but.
So you're not in on Hader, Brett?
Oh, I like Hader a lot. No,
but as a closing option. Saves.
I don't think he's getting saves at all. And yes, Albers did, although he only pitched 2/3 of an inning and he gave up 2 hits.
Well, that's how good he is. He only needs to pitch 2/3 of an inning.
That's also just how Matt Albers does.
That is true. That's how he do.
Yeah. So just a brutal week for our teams across the various 20-team leagues we're in.
Yes.
I was going to say the best way to tell if a player you care about is hurt is just to look up our RDI roster, because yep. If he's on it, he's certainly hurt.
Yeah, and Knebel on my TDGX roster. Yep.
Brett, do you want to say anything about Travis d'Arnaud, or do you want to just move on because that makes everyone sad?
It makes me really sad, but it's probably better for my health.
Ben and I moved on very quickly.
I saw.
We cut him
immediately. Yeah.
I saw the drop before I saw the news.
I got a chat from JP Breen being like, dude, harsh. I was like, look, the situation is.
It's not great.
It was a tenuous situation in the first place, and weird. An elbow injury isn't going to help.
Down to 9 catchers in that league now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Ben, we were talking about, obviously, with Nick Senzel in potentially replacing Suarez and him playing different positions. Jermaine Jones, now a second baseman.
I
know this was relative news to you, but do you feel that this changes his value in any real substantive way? I mean, it's still a little bit in the experiment phase, but this kind of happened in spring training and they thought, you know, we'll see how it goes. And he played second or infield in as a prep player, and now they're going to roll on with it as an experiment into the regular season.
So now I was surprised at the time, but now that we're talking about it, I have deja vu, and I feel like we've already spoken about this on Tino.
We did touch on it.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously it's a slight uptick because you'd rather have a second baseman than an outfielder, but it's not I don't think it's crazy. If he ended up, you know, as this is a poor real-life example, but if he ended up as a I don't know, Chris Owings without the shortstop eligibility type, who, you know, sometimes played in the infield, sometimes manned center field, that would be great, obviously. So it can only help for now. Hopefully it sticks and he still has that eligibility when he reaches the majors.
Yeah, I mean, Brett, I'm trying to think of other guys that are kind of in that mold. I mean, Owings is an interesting one. Obviously was a shortstop more so. Second baseman, I go back to Jason Kipnis is kind of the guy I think of.
I think the dream is that he's kind of Brandon Phillips, right? I mean,
you mean just as a second baseman?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm probably blanking. I'm more remembering recent Brandon Phillips. How much did Brandon Phillips run back in the day?
He was consistently 20 plus steals.
Then yeah, I think that's
I don't
right.
think I don't think Jermaine Jones is going to be a I don't think he's going to be a 30 plus steal guy, but looking at Brandon Phillips from in his first his first four major league seasons in 2006 through 2009, he had 25 steals, 32 steals, 23 steals, 25 steals. I think that's doable. That's one. Yeah.
Was that on the top of your head? I'm very impressed.
I think he's got more power than Jemai is going to have. He also, in that same span, he averaged about 22, 23 homers a year. I think it's probably a little higher than I'd project for Jones, but I think 15, 25 is attainable.
Guys, you can project power anymore, you know?
I'm going to say something that I mean sincerely that would have had us all falling out of our chairs 14 months ago. I think we all have to hope that Jermaine Jones is the new Whit Merrifield.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, sure.
Times have changed.
Times have changed.
Man.
All right.
Deeply upsetting.
Craig, do you want to stick with minor leaguers and go with some of the assignments we were talking about earlier, or do you have any more injuries to discuss?
No, obviously Michael Chavis out for 80 games. I don't remember which steroid it was, but that's I don't want to say it's like a death blow. Obviously he could come back and still hit for power, but this was a guy who where power was his carrying tool as a fantasy asset. So being popped for steroids is obviously a pretty negative situation. Does this change your guys' evaluation of him at all? Where was he on the 101? I assume he was kind of towards the back.
Yeah, he was right around 50, I think.
I mean, what does this change your feeling on him? I mean, I know for a guy, for a pitcher, for example, and it wasn't a steroid, but Forrest Whitley, we were all kind of not moved at all by the suspension. It was we didn't really care. Does this change for you, Ben?
I just don't know enough about the way they work and what they do to your physical abilities to really say if it's going to sap his power or not. I mean, obviously it dings him some. Both because there's a chance of that and also because, you know, it's obviously now a character question mark he didn't have before. But it's not the type of thing where he goes from 50 to off the list for me or anything like that.
Brett, are you in the same camp?
Yep. Right. Sorry, I was on mute. But yes, I'm in the same camp. I honestly, I don't think even the ranking that we had didn't really take into account a ton of 2018 value just because, you know, I don't think we really saw a natural place for him on the Red Sox roster anyway. So, you know, the one thing I think this probably does do is it lowers his trade value, which means there's probably less of a chance he ends up as a, you know, as a starter somewhere else in the second half. But, you know, in terms of 2019 and beyond, I'm not really feeling much different about Chavis.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the question is, like, whether it changes his, you know, his timetable to the majors, right? He was at AA for a partial season last year, so now he loses 80 games, which is just over half of the minor league season. So he probably goes back to AA and finishes there as opposed to getting AAA time, if I'm just, you know, spitballing.
Yep.
So maybe he arrives a little later than we previously anticipated, but probably nothing major.
Yeah, I don't think it's by a huge amount.
So what Ben was alluding to in terms of assignments is we just want to walk through some assignments on the good and bad side. I guess good and bad is maybe a little reductive, but assignments that we liked that were kind of teams being aggressive with guys that really intrigued us, and maybe some other ones where we thought it was a little overly conservative. And so, I mean, I'll start with the aggressive ones for the most part. I think, Kybert Ruiz, son of a bitch. I assume you guys can hear that, right?
Yeah. We won't say any names, but just keep the mystery sounds in the back. That's
fine. God fucking damn it. All right. So starting with the aggressive ones, Kybert Ruiz, the Dodgers, or Kiebert, whatever, the Dodgers catcher, they started him at AA, part of which is because they have a kind of a catcher logjam, although they have both him and Will Smith at AA right now. He spent most of last year at low A. Ruiz did get some time at high A. Obviously I enjoy a guy like this being challenged. But what it does do is kind of say that if he doesn't hit right away, there's some context for it. He's only 19. He's a switch hitting catcher. Keeping all of that intact while splitting time with another guy at AA is obviously a challenge. And so if he does struggle, like, there are a lot of excuses built into it. I think it makes it a little bit harder to analyze the stats. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Just running through some other names, Alex Faedo, the Tigers' first round pick, didn't pitch after being drafted last year just because he was used so heavily in college. They put him right in the Florida State League in high A, which is interesting. We've already got a 10 pack on him with video. So if people want to look at that, they should. Brett, do you have any feelings on Faedo or Ruiz in terms of these types of assignments and what it means for their prospect value?
I think Ruiz is the more interesting one just because I think they had more of a choice there. Faedo, I think, is that's the assignment I think I would have pegged him at. He's a very advanced college arm. That's not surprising that he would start in high A. So I think it's obviously a good assignment for him because I think he can, I think he can get off to a good pro start in the Florida State League. And kind of build from there. It also keeps him in warm weather, right? I mean, he was pitching in warm weather in college. I think he's a warm weather high school guy too, if I remember correctly. So
yeah, he was in Florida. He was at University of Florida. And I guess I shouldn't say aggressive, but like this is where he should be probably.
It is. They could have put him in low A, and no one would have batted an eye. But putting him in
which
high
like
A,
the Reds did with Nick Senzel, for example, like everyone thought he'd start at AA his first full season, and they started him at high. You know, and it's just that type of stuff does happen.
Yep.
Sorry, Ben. Go ahead.
Why do I get the feeling that? That Pearson is going to be like getting holds for the Jays in August.
if they are in the hunt, like that wouldn't exactly surprise me, right? They're obviously not afraid to push high octane arms. Although obviously the examples that we have to draw from are from the Anthopoulos regime rather than Atkins and Shapiro. But, you know, I think it doesn't take much to remember, like, Roberto Osuna was a highly touted pitching prospect. Miguel Castro was someone who people liked as a starting pitching prospect. And both of them were jumped from high A to the majors, right into the bullpen in an effort to contend. It wouldn't shock me if a guy with Pearson's raw stuff could go from high A, where they've started him out at, to the majors and shove. I mean, he throws, you know, upper 90s, and that's nothing to sneeze at, and it's not something that, you know, developmentally it might not be the ideal path to keep him as a starter, but they could do that, you know, late in the season this year and then send him back to AA or AAA next year and work as a starter or something like that. Like, these guys don't necessarily have to follow set, you know, linear development paths and stuff like this, especially with arms. I mean, I think Pearson, part of the reason he dropped was he had some medical issues, and if he's healthy and throwing well, they might just want to get the most out of him that they can. Yeah, I don't know if Brett, am I crazy for agreeing with Ben on that, or?
No, I think he's the kind of arm that you could do that with. I don't know. I guess the crazier part is the Blue Jays being in contention, but I mean, it's April. Everyone should have those dreams.
I was, I was on mute, but I laughed. I just need that for the record.
Fair enough. another one this one really did take me by surprise, Brett, Jermaine Palacios, the one piece that came back from Minnesota to Tampa Bay in the Jake Odorizzi trade, starting out at Double A. He did play about 60 something games at High A last year. He's a shortstop. But you know, I don't know. I thought he was more of a guy that would take a full season at high A, even if it was split between two seasons. You know what I mean? I thought they'd give him another half season at high A and then promote him, and they shoved him right in Double A.
No, I think it's great. I was not expecting that either.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure that I necessarily. It's surprising, and I generally like aggressiveness, but. This was a guy who, in his half season in the Florida State League with the Twins, hit 269, 303, 359. He's only 21. This is a situation I'm a little bit less sure of, like, what's to be gained by pushing him like this. He, you know, he's not much of a, I don't know. He slugged in the Midwest League. He hit 544. So for him to drop under, you know, under 400 and significantly under 400 in the Florida State League, which, admittedly, it's a pitcher's league, but for him to do that and then get pushed up to Double A feels really aggressive to me. And I think it's unlikely that he produces, a ton in the Southern League at Montgomery right away. And I think it's going to be hard to contextualize where he's at. I think with a guy like Ruiz, there are such pure reports on his ability to hit. And as a switch hitter, he's got power and the ability to hit. I think Palacios is a little more divisive, and I don't see any of those things getting settled with him being pushed this hard. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, it's fun, but it did very well might just not teach us anything.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's fair. It's just, you know, for people watching that type of thing, it's going to be hard to draw any firm conclusions, I guess. Even if if he does great, then obviously that changes things, but struggles aren't necessarily good struggles are never great, but they don't necessarily help us reach a conclusion.
Yeah.
Struggles are never great should be the name of this episode. Yeah.
All right, just a couple others to run through. I mean, I think this is more in line with the Alex Fedo thing, but Helio Ramos is starting his first full season in full season ball at low A. I don't think that's necessarily a surprise. I think it's the right move given his talent, but like for as young as he is, and as recently as he was drafted, he easily could have started in extended spring training and then gone to short season ball. Don't you think, Ben?
Yeah. I mean, that wouldn't have surprised me at all, but you know, this is more fun.
Yeah. And I think he has the talent to produce here. Three other names. If people are trying to keep track, the D-backs got aggressive, and this is interesting to note because they haven't really had a ton of prospects since Mike Hazen and team took over. And they took their first three draft picks from the 2017 draft, Pavin Smith, Dalton Varsho, and Drew Ellis. And they skipped all of them from short season ball all the way over low A to high A to start the year. So it might be the case that Hazen and his team there are willing to be aggressive with their prospects. And that could be something that we want to start, you know, keeping track of and just building into other guys that they end up acquiring via trade or draft, that they're willing to push those guys. And one more aggressive one, and Brett, I'll be interested to get your take on this because I'm not sure I'm a fan of it. Austin Beck, starting the season in full season ball in low A for the A's. The reports that we've seen out of A's camp from post-draft and from spring training this year, or that I've seen at least, have not been particularly kind. Do you like this move for a guy that seems to have not really had his swing together?
I given where he was taken in the draft, I don't hate it. I think, I think this may very well be one of those like I always think of Reimer Liriano because he was always like the guy that got bumped up one level higher than he should have at the beginning of a couple of seasons and ended up moving down and then being awesome. Mm-hmm. And we probably should have taken that as a sign that he would ultimately disappoint us.
RIP Reimer.
Yes. But you know, I think it's fair to stick him there and see what happens. I mean, the questions on him, we all know. I mean, he's, you know, on the bright side, you know, you want to send him there and just make sure he's not just make sure he's making contact, which he has been doing so far. I mean, we'll see how April goes, but I'm not confident that he's going to have a good season, but holding his own in low A, I think, would be a good developmental step for him, and maybe a better one than being held back and extended and then getting sent to the New York Penn League.
Yeah, and maybe it's one of those, like you said, one of those situations where he starts in low A and then heads to short season ball when that kicks up. I mean, yep. I guess the concern I have is another name to throw out there is like Garrett Whitley. Really struggled initially, was more project than prospect kind of. And I think, you know, obviously he went pretty high, Beck went higher, but I still think there's like a lot of pieces to put together, and it could get ugly pretty fast in full season ball for a guy like Beck. Obviously, hoping I'm wrong, but that was kind of my take on it. Ben, I know you had a couple surprises that didn't start in places that we kind of anticipated in the other direction.
Yeah, so I think two outfielders who stick out for me are Juan Soto starting in low A, which, you know, isn't crazy, but he certainly has. I mean, he'd probably be the best outfielder for like the Marlins right now. So certainly has the talent to be playing higher than that. But strikes me as the kind of situation where if he's good for a few weeks, that will take care of itself.
Yeah, I think he's a quick promotion candidate, and it's probably injuries that put him there. Given that that Carter Kieboom was also a guy who was injured a bunch, and he started at Potomac rather than Hagerstown for Washington. But if you can see Hagerstown, they've got Juan Soto, Luis Garcia, and Yasiel Antuna all together, which is pretty fun.
Yeah, those are two guys that we could have talked about in the previous section. I mean, those are fun assignments.
Pretty sure we discussed that, but it was also like we've talked about it. Brett, you definitely expected that for Garcia at least.
I did, yeah, and I'm happy to see it. But I think I don't know that. If you want to go see Hagerstown, I don't know that Soto is going to be there for more than another like 7 to 10 days. I think he's going to be in Potomac very, very quickly. I still think he's going to be in Double A by the second half of this year.
Yeah, he's already mashing. We should be clear. Like he went 3-for-3 with a home run last night. So
he's slugging .913.
Seems good.
He's good.
So you had another outfielder, Ben.
Yeah. Well, and maybe a similar scenario where injuries are part of the story here, but Anthony Alford is back at high A. You know, this is going to be his 17th season as a prospect. So it would be great to see him string together 6 to 8 healthy weeks and start facing some more advanced arms because, you know, the Blue Jays made some moves to fill out their outfield this season, but Alfred is talented enough that you would think the playing time is there if he's able to, you know, play up to his abilities. So hopefully he's able to get a little higher in the ladder soon.
Yeah, and just some arms to run through. Dan Dunning back at High A, he definitely spent some time there last year. Again, this is another situation that I wouldn't expect he's there for too long or even half the season. I would expect to see him in Double A pretty quick, which I think it's a little disappointing that he's at High A because I think Double A is the real challenge here. Given that he has an advanced changeup and has been able to use that to kind of abuse the lower minors, I'm really intrigued to see what he can do against Double A hitters. The other guy I think deserves to come back, but it's kind of a notable situation. Riley Pint got sent back to Asheville. He spent the full season there last year. Terrible results. I mean, just could not command the fastball. The stuff is still prodigious in a lot of senses, but he needs to be able to miss bats with it, and he hasn't been able to do that yet. So that's one of those situations where it made a lot of sense that he was back, but still was kind of disappointing to see in terms of his prospect arc, I suppose. I think that's probably enough of that. But Ben, were you surprised to see where Enya got assigned?
Welcome back to episode 106 of Tino. So we are going to send you out today with another edition of Madden or Mad Online. So we had the inaugural one last week, but we think we've fine-tuned it a little bit. So Craig, I'll toss it to you, and maybe you can either re-explain or just sort of let us roll. I'll leave that in your capable hands.
Yeah, I think it's everyone's favorite segment that they're not sure about and don't really understand.
Yes, agreed.
We don't really understand it ourselves here, but it's just really people. It's a vehicle to talk about stuff that's going on within the baseball universe. And if you just accept it as that, don't really worry about whether Madden or Mad Online actually mean anything. You're going to be far better off. Okay, so just don't tweet us about it or send us an email. It's just we're talking about baseball. So. I'll start this week with my Madden moment of the week was Torey Lovullo. I said that wrong, didn't I, Ben? Is it Lovello?
It's Lovello.
Yeah, God, it's unbelievable. Torey Lovullo gets ejected and also gets Yadier Molina ejected. He comes out to argue.
No, what? Molina did not. Molina did not.
He didn't get ejected. He only got suspended.
No, yeah, he just got suspended.
Oh, good stuff. Even better. Okay, so Torey Lovullo comes out to argue a call. He demonstrates towards Molina. Molina gets irate and kind of goes after Lovullo, and the ump is kind of keeping them apart. Is that a fair retelling of what happened?
Yes.
So my Madden moment here is not that Lovullo argued a call or made Yadi mad, although we can all agree that's a positive. It's his explanation after the game. So it comes out that Lovullo, in the process of complaining to the umpire, called Molina a motherfucker. And not in the way that when you talk about a prospect and be like, oh, he's a motherfucker, like it's a good way. It was like this motherfucker over here is getting strike calls when he shouldn't or something like that. And the beauty of this moment was Lovullo saying, no, that was a compliment. I wouldn't say that unless you were doing something really good and making me mad about it. It's an incredible spin, you know? It's kind of like when you say something and it's like, no, I mean bad, like you're a bad man.
It just right, like the famous 2003 Mike Jones hit "Bad."
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Welcome. So that was my Madden moment. I don't know if you guys had any thoughts on it or enjoyed it quite to the extent that I did, but I enjoyed it very much. So Ben, what was your Madden moment of the week?
My Madden moment of the week is Eric Hosmer not catching a pop-up to lose the game, because I think it's classic, like, you know, maybe if you're a college listener and you're in a class for the first time and you want to see, like, how often you can get away with not doing your homework, or you're starting a new job and you're not quite sure how lenient your new boss will be. You just want to sort of – you want to test your limits when you're in a new situation to see where you are. And Hosmer got – dunked on all offseason. And can you imagine if he did this, if he had gone to the Red Sox or to another major market team? I mean, it would be the end all be all in that market. And he went to San Diego. So everyone was like, haha, for 40 minutes. And then everybody else forgot about the fact that he lost the game because he couldn't catch a pop up. So my respect for Eric Hosmer grows. I hope he continues to just show slack his entire Padres career, and I'm proud of him.
Yeah, it really was a growth moment for him. Could you imagine being like a star player playing your whole career in Kansas City and in San Diego?
That's
spectacular.
I am missing a Red Sox Yankees fight right now, instigated by Joe Kelly, to be on this.
Yeah, we'll get to that in our Matt in our Matt Online moment.
God perhaps. Damn.
We've had a couple red and nude and Mad Online baseball players today. So, Brett, did you have a Madden moment to discuss?
Yeah, my Madden moment is basically Keith Hernandez's Twitter feed. I am sure it, like everything else, will inevitably disappoint us. But it is right now that just adorable mixture of earnestness, not really knowing how to use Twitter,
but not knowing how is
more earnestness.
There is. I'm trying to find it so I could read directly. Well, first of all, he's got a tweet out there right now that's just thanks, Ted.
Yep, that is one of the first ones I saw when I clicked on it before the podcast. It's just it's great.
Okay, so I have to go through an exchange because I support you choosing this. Hernandez, it's like he's unintentionally weird Twitter.
Yeah.
He tweeted in all caps because he changed his Twitter handle. He tweeted in all caps, important notice, attention. Twitter recommended that I change my Twitter handle. I can now be found. And then he tweeted his new handle, which, of course, if you were already following him, it changes automatically. And then he says, and notice the blue check. And then Keith Olbermann quote tweets him and says, that means you're really you. They checked, which is utterly worthless, as are a lot of Keith's tweets. And Keith Hernandez replies to Keith Olbermann, and I'm going to point this out especially because they share a same first name. Like, this shouldn't be hard for Hernandez to address him by his first name, but he replies to Keith Olbermann, hi, Steve, see you at the park. Thanks for the shout out. he's just utterly destroying Keith Olbermann with calling him Steve. It's phenomenal. It's incredible shade.
It's glorious.
I hope he never learns how to use Twitter. I hope this is just...
Yeah, no, it needs to remain. He needs to stay in weird Twitter, but like unintentionally weird Twitter area. I don't know how to use words.
Strong support, though. Strong support for this.
All right, Ben, do you want to kick us off on the Matt Online segment for this?
Yeah, this is an easy one for me. So we've been on a bit of a stupid memes kick lately, and I've also been mad online about lots of baseball things. So this is sort of the perfect intersection of the two. If you're familiar with the stupid fucking yodeling kid in Walmart, I'm sorry. If you're not, don't look it up. It's bad. But because everybody has to try to be too clever by half, there are now major leaguers who are either using it as their walk-up music or, you know, using it when they come in from the bullpen. I believe Kike Hernandez was one who used it as walk-up music.
He's a little too up in general.
Joe Kelly, he of the great stuff, who apparently just ignited this brawl with the Yankees, is another one. And they're I hate it. I hate them. They're not that funny. It reminds me of Sam Miller's whole are athletes actually funny, or are we just saying they're funny because they're athletes? And this is sort of a classic case of athletes trying way too hard.
This is where I am on Fortnite references.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know Xander did like the dance at one point, and I think the Astros outfield does some other version of it when they win now, which is just a ripoff of Red Sox dance, post-game dance, in the outfield. But this is how I know I'm old, but I'm done with Fortnite. It's not interesting.
That's, I don't have a Fortnite take. I've now also aged out of understanding.
Brett, do you know what Fortnite is?
Not a fucking clue.
I was just disappointed Brett didn't say 20 days or whatever.
It's 14 days. Come on.
I'm not old enough
to know what a Fortnite is, and you know.
See, it's at least as good that he knew what it was. I'll give him that. All right, my Matt Online moment prior to the two brawls today, because we should mention Nolan Arenado went hard at Luis Perdomo, who not only missed him with a pitch, but then also missed him with a glove, was Chris Davis breaking a bat over his knee after a strikeout. And I bring this up only because, like, Chris Davis strikes out all the – this is the Orioles, Chris Davis, I should point out. Chris Davis strikes out all the goddamn time. How is one strikeout in April making him reach a point that he's breaking a bat over his knee? You know what I mean? I feel like that's
– at least he made contact with his knee.
It's something he reliably makes contact with, because someone pulled up video from either 2017 or 2016 where he did the same thing in April. And I want to be like, how – mad, like, this is your game, is that you strike out half the time. So, like, how are you reaching this breaking point already? You know what I mean?
Maybe it's like maybe the bat is like a hand warmer that you have to like crack in order to get to like heat up.
That would be good. I like that. So what do you have for us this week, Brett?
My Mad Online segment for the week is all about Cam Bedrosian. So basically, fuck Cam Bedrosian. I keep getting roped into his bullshit, and I am done. And I want both of you guys to hold me accountable for this going forward. Every time I read a positive piece of news about Bedrosian, I think, you know what? There's the future Angels closer that I expect to see, and then he comes out and shits the bed every time. His velocity is down. It's always down. He gives up too many hits. He doesn't really throw strikes. He doesn't miss bats. He is really infuriating to own and to watch, and I'm done. I'm tired of it. I'm out.
What's great is that if you blacked out and didn't hear that this was about Cam Bedrosian, but knew it was about the Angels and their relievers, you would have no idea who Brett was talking about.
Correct.
Can I do a preemptive Mad Online?
Yes.
I'm preemptively Mad Online about all the people who are going to be Mad Online about baseball fights now, because now all we're going to hear for 48 hours is about how morally upright and heroic all of our very enlightened baseball Twitter fellows are, who think this is just barbaric and has no part in the game, which, like, is not a dumb opinion, but just shut up. It's not going to change anytime soon. Just, we know how you feel. You make it very clear. No one wants to see anyone beamed in the head. We can all agree on that, but we don't need, I'm just not looking forward to the next 72 hours of like slate articles from baseball Twitter.
I will say I was pretty surprised that a lot of the initial reaction to Perdomo throwing at Arenado. Well, and he also hit two guys prior, I should point out. But he threw at Arenado, and then Arenado charged him. He threw his glove at him and then backpedaled. He kind of did the Pedro backpedal. And everyone was like, well, you got to stand and take it if you're going to throw at someone. And I was kind of like, well, that wasn't what I was expected. Kind of thought everyone would just be mad about the throwing at him, but
you know, that's fair.
So yeah, you know, maybe we're in for a different. Maybe you can write the contrarian, like you should write the take like people who say that we shouldn't have like the beanball wars, but actually just have it be about you shouldn't back down once you do bean someone. I don't know. I feel like there's something there.
Maybe all extra inning games should be decided by beanball wars.
It's kind of like the baseball version of a shootout.
Yeah, basically. Except more pain.
Yeah, sure.
I think if Enya drilled someone, she would stick it out.
Yeah.
You think she'd stand her ground?
I do.
Or you think she'd retreat to her castle?
Welcome back to episode 106 of Tino. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. You can follow us on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett on Twitter at BrettSayerBP. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in...
Commute Destroyer.
Goldstein? Not great. You can find our producer, George, at George Bissell. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thanks for listening and have a good night.
I like the real-time reviews. That's good.
Yeah, well.
I like, Brett, I like yours, but it was a full sentence and I thought it might throw Ben into a full-blown meltdown again.
Well, I know, that was the whole point.
Well, I know, but the downside to it is that the CD in that is Chris Davis. It's a name, and that's literally not what my name, the CD as in. It's, do you see what I'm running into here?
I see. I mean, it's really kind of semantics, but